Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Titles in 6 years. Yes, it is worth cheering for.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I am your host, Dave Melton, back at it again, the assistant editor from Second City Hockey. And with me tonight, the two people you're very used to hearing on these airwaves. First off, he's the resident Second City Hockey pun master. It is Brandon Kane.
Oh, sorry.
And the other voice that you're used to hearing here, it is the resident Alex DeBrincat hater, Shepherd Price.
I do not hate Alex DeBrincat. I simply think he needs to do more than score 20 goals this season.
Just really wanted to quickly throw you under the bus for everyone else to drive over before we even get started tonight.
Again, if your sole job, as Alex DeBrincat's sort of made clear that he believes the sole job is to score goals, can't score 20, but you have to score at least 30.
Fair, that's a fair point. But we'll deal with that later. He doesn't actually hate Alex DeBrincat, folks. I promise. I just like to get him hate mail on Twitter as soon as possible. So
here we are. I'm not on Twitter anymore. So let's go.
Smart move. Probably for the best.
Mental health, baby.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we're coming to you kind of in the middle of the bye week wastelands. Not a lot of hockey going on in general right now. Definitely none going on for the Blackhawks. Haven't played since last Tuesday's game against the Florida Panthers, losing to old coach with his new team, Joel Quenneville. So because there's been nothing happening on the ice for us to talk about, we want to take a step back tonight and do something a little bit bigger picture, a little bit of a wider lens, wider focus in our discussion tonight. And we were discussing this before we started recording here, and I'm not exactly sure how this is all going to work, but here's the general idea of what we're working with, is that it seems like the Blackhawks have not committed to a full rebuild, and they're working in the direction of trying to win a fourth cup while Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, and Duncan Keith are still doing things at the level at which they can, Patrick Kane especially. So what we want to figure out tonight is kind of what is the quickest path for them to get to another Stanley Cup, and whether or not they're going to be able to do that before Patrick Kane starts to regress. Because I think Kane, we were talking about this before we started here, is that it seems like as long as Patrick Kane is still being the A-plus forward, as Shepard described him earlier, if he's still playing at that level, the Hawks still have a shot because not every team has a Patrick Kane. Once Kane stops doing what he's doing, they don't really have anybody else with his skill set and with his level of play in the system, and that's when you're probably going to have to really talk about blowing things up. And it's because the Blackhawks have had this recent 12-6 stretch in the last 18 games, they're back into the playoff picture, so I think all tanking discussions have probably ceased for a while. So with that in mind, first off, I guess, just what do you see, Shepard, as, I guess, how likely do you see a Stanley Cup for this team, we'll say, in the next 2 to 3 seasons? Like, I guess, I don't know if you want to put a percentage on it, put a grade on it. Just, do you think it's possible for this team to pull it off to win a fourth cup in the next 2 to 3 years?
Possible, yes. Likely, no, because there's one key factor I see. Okay. I think you're seeing in this sort of sustained run since the new year the new sort of Blackhawks is that they have the roster potential. They have the roster talent. Their system still doesn't work. Still doesn't maximize those talents.
Okay.
If you do one key thing, maybe, and that's hire a new coach, because Jeremy Colliton's not going to win you a cup.
Okay. That was much more of a sturdier foundation to your argument than I expected any of us to have, because this is such a very vague and not firm topic, I guess, we're talking about. So did not, but impressed, because I can see the point. I mean, Jeremy Colliton hasn't been a coach in the NHL, so you don't know if he can win anything. And there's certainly still questions that exist about his system, because it hasn't happened as much in the last month or two, but there just seems like there's so many instances where there's a guy wide open in the slot in front of the goaltender with an easy chance to score who usually scores. And that just – it seemed like it happened too often to ever think the Blackhawks were going to be good. And at some point, it seemed like it was more of a scheme and strategy or system issue than it was a player issue. So I see what you're getting at with that, Shepard. I can't say I disagree. Brandon, what about you? Where do you think – where would you put the likelihood of another Blackhawks Stanley Cup in the next 2 to 3 seasons roughly?
Well, I would say – less than 69%.
I figured you were going to go with 69 or 83. So
that's significant. That's a good that's significantly less nice.
The reason behind that is what Shepard said with the system and players not either being put in optimal situations or just not performing to where they should be. And also the state of a certain team that plays out west that is in the Central Division.
I couldn't possibly know who you're talking about there.
Yeah, the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, definitely the Avalanche.
That's definitely going to be the biggest hurdle they're going to have to climb over the next couple of years. Is they're going to have to beat Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and maybe even Bowen Byram, who myself and it seemed like everybody else wanted the Hawks to draft last year instead of Kirby Dach. Although maybe Kirby Dach ends up to be a pretty good player himself. So, but that's
there's also Newhook that was drafted in the first round last year too.
Newhook and Timmins, and they have just an astounding blue line coming up.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons to be scared about Colorado. I feel like there could be a really, really good Hawks Avalanche. I almost said Norris Division, even though it doesn't exist anymore, but Central Division final in the second round of the playoffs could be a lot of fun between those two teams if we ever get to that point. And it'll be a throwback to like the night. I just remember the Jeremy Roenick quote when they had the series against the Avalanche with Patrick Waugh. Roenick said something about Waugh's Jacques was in the rafters or something. And then Waugh said, I couldn't hear Jeremy because I had my Stanley Cup rings in my ears, which is still one of like the top five best replies I've ever heard in an interview from someone. But anyway, back to the topic on hand in this century, discussing this path to the fourth cup that the Blackhawks are going to get. And I think we're going to get a lot of answers about a lot of things in the next couple of months. First off, we're going to find out whether the Hawks are going to be buyers and sellers at the trade deadline based off how they play in the first few weeks, with the trade deadline coming up at the end of February. And that'll hopefully give us some insight into what is going on organizationally, kind of what their thought is. But the most intrigue is by far, I think, at the goaltending position, because at the moment the Hawks do not have a goalie, at an NHL goalie, that is under contract for next season. They have Colin Delia for 2 more seasons at $1 million, and then they just signed Matt Tompkins to a 3-year deal. Those guys are probably AHL goalies. If Colin Delia really pans out, he's probably only a backup for the first season or two in the NHL. And then Kevin Lankinen, I believe, is an RFA after this season. So those are 3 goalies who are not going to be your number one at the NHL level. The 2 they have right now, Robin Lehner and Corey Crawford, are both on expiring contracts and will be unrestricted free agents this summer. So my first question to you, Shepard, is if you're looking at charting the shortest path to a Stanley Cup for the Blackhawks franchise, what do you do with that goaltender situation?
When you say 3 people who won't be yours number one, I think Columbus was in the same situation last season with Elvis, with Merzlikins, and with Korpisalo. And it turns out, they had 2 number ones.
Okay, fair.
So I wouldn't write off Lankinen and Delia just yet. It's
okay,
but Columbus is also about their defensive system, and they're one of the top five defensive teams in the league.
Right.
Which the Blackhawks are not.
Correct.
But to get back to your point, what's the quickest route? You go with the guy who got you there the first two out of three times, who probably would have gotten you there the third time too, if he was given the net over Cristobal Huey and Antti Niemi. And you, Corey Crawford's not bad enough this season to give up on him. He's willing to stay in Chicago, he's willing to stay in Chicago. With that said, he's your second option. If Robin Leonard, who's younger, I know they're having discussions with his team right now. If he's willing to stay in Chicago at $8 million or less, I think you go Robin Leonard. If he's not willing to do that and he wants his $10 million, with his Vezina season last season, Vezina nominee season last year, and the way he's playing this year, you trade him to the Hurricanes. Yeah, right. They have a lot of really good players. They don't have a lot of spots for the number of defensemen they have. You see if you can pry Hayden Fleury and Jake Bean from them.
Okay. Because that's where I think, like, the number one intriguing thing for me is the Robin Leonard situation. I think this is by far the most difficult decision that Stan Bowman will have to make in the next 3 to 4 months is what he does with Robin Leonard. Because the number you said, $8 million, I think that's where I was at. I think roughly somewhere in the $6 to $8 million range annual salary cap hit, that's what Leonard's going to get. And it's just a question of where he gets it at. Because the issue with Chicago is that the Hawks, looking at their cap-friendly page right now, they have 14 players under contract at the NHL level with a projected cap hit of $71 million. That NHL salary cap is right now at 81.5. It goes, I don't know, goes up to maybe what, like 85 next year? I don't know if there's a good way, but let's just say, for the sake of math, they go up to $85 million next year with a salary cap ceiling. You add, and we'll go $7 million for Robin Leonard. That should put you up just over 78. You have 15 players under contract. That means they're going to have to find another 7-8 skaters with $7 million of salary cap space.
And that doesn't include Dylan Strome's extension yet. It doesn't include a number of players, Dominic Kubalik, yet. Yeah. Those two are arguably your most important, besides the net, those two are arguably your most important two signings this year.
And that's why I've seen this floated in a few places. I've heard this on a few other Blackhawks podcasts I listen to, and I can't get my head around any other idea than trading Robin Leonard at the deadline and hoping that the return you get for Robin Leonard, if there's any kind of fall off from Leonard to Crawford, that is made up by the haul that you get for Robin Leonard. Cause you have a guy who won the Vezina, should get nominated for it again. He's 28 years old. I think he's still very much in the prime of his career, showing no signs of slowing down. Like, the Hawks could get so much from him. You could get a top prospect that's ready to go. You get a first round pick and maybe other picks on top of it. You could get a top four defenseman that's ready to go right now in play. I even had one thought. You could package the Brent Seabrook contract with Robin Leonard. Obviously, no trade clauses involved in all that. But package that together, and then you have $7 million to play with in the offseason to sign whatever free agent defensemen are available. Haven't even looked to know what free agent defensemen are out there, and there probably aren't any good ones, but that was just another idea I had. So there's a lot of places to go here, and I keep it's so hard to think about trading away Robin Leonard when he's been so vital and so good for the Blackhawks this season. But the thing you mentioned, Shepard, where they're going to have to pay Dylan Strome, they're going to have to pay Dominic Kubalik, and I feel like if you can improve the play of the skaters in front of the goalie, then the goalie position, they don't have to rely on goalies as much as they are right now.
Right. And just so, quickly, Robin Leonard did not win the Vezina. He was a finalist.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Well, he'll be a two-time Vezina finalist. He should be after this season. Thank you for correcting me.
But, you're good.
And if they ended up re-signing Robin Leonard for 5 years and $7 million a season, or they got him somehow to take a bridge deal for 2 or 3 years at $6 million, although I'm not – after some of his comments to the media, he ain't taking anything other than a massive deal, as he should be. Like, he's earned it. He deserves a big payday. So if the Hawks kept Leonard around, it wouldn't be totally disappointing, but I just keep thinking about the haul they could get for Robin Leonard at the deadline, and it's just – oh. It seems like he can make the team in front of goalie so much better and whatever. But that's where I'm at with this. And so I'm still torn. I can definitely would enjoy the haul, but I also Robin Leonard's a really good goalie. So Brandon Kane, what about you? What are you thinking with all this stuff?
I think that they'll keep Leonard. And they'll
there goes my hope.
And they'll trade Crawford. I don't know if it's done during the deadline because goalie trades aren't necessarily a thing that happens at the deadline, and if they are, they're not really seen as successful, because when you are a goalie and you're traded at the deadline, you have to switch systems like on the fly, and you have to learn all your new teammates and how to communicate with them, and when you are pushing for the playoffs, that's really not ideal,
right?
So in the theory of it, yes, trading a goalie makes sense. Like, this guy's been performing super well. But then the other side of it is all the new things that he has to learn on the fly to get adjusted. And how long is that adjustment period? And if the team is playing bad during that stretch, then you're like, well, we just got this goalie and he's struggling right away. And how long do you balance the needing to get him into games versus – well, he's not doing well, so we need to have someone else in there. So that's why I don't foresee that happening. But,
okay.
I mean, I've been wrong plenty of times before. So
Yeah, same here. I have no – just because they trade Robin Leonard doesn't mean they get a good haul for him, and so I could also definitely be wrong. I also should also mention the thing you said, Brandon, about trading Corey Crawford. Like, that is definitely another option that's on the table. You can trade Corey Crawford. I don't think you'll get as much of a haul in a Crawford trade as you would in a Leonard trade because Crawford's older. The numbers aren't quite as good as Leonard's have been this season. And, you know, I don't know how many guys teams are willing to pin their hopes on a 35-year-old goalie, but he does have 2 Stanley Cups on his resume, and Leonard does not have that. And maybe some GM is willing to look at Corey Crawford and say, you've won 2 Cups. Here's everything in the world. Take them. So,
And that could be a situation where it's – you trade him to a team that gets eliminated from the playoffs and they thought their goaltending was good, but then they realize maybe it wasn't. And it's one of those deals where it's like that week to 2 week period right before the NHL draft.
Right.
Because that seems like a weird window where there always just so happens to be trades that occur.
And you can also, even those guys are the 2 goalies that have expiring contracts, you can trade like the rights to negotiate with those 2 players in that window.
Correct. Yeah, as you did with Scott Darling.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned Scott Darling, Shepard, because one of the other things about the Hawks over the last 4 to 5 years, they've been able to like just pluck goalies out of nowhere and make them into pretty good NHL goalies. Like, Scott Darling was one. They pulled, I think it was in the ECHL at the time. They pulled Antti Raatta out of nowhere. And they revitalized Ray Emery's career. I mean, go back a decade, they turned Antti Niemi into a Stanley Cup winning goalie in a season when he wasn't exactly, no one had really thought he was that good before. And I don't know if he's been that good since. So they've shown the ability to just find goalies, even like Colin Dilley and Kevin Lankinen, and 2 other guys in the system. I think the Hawks just signed each of them as undrafted free agents, right? I know they did. That was the case with Dilley. I don't know about Lankinen. So the Hawks can find goalies. Whether or not they can find him at the NHL level, that's another story. And I don't think there's anybody in the system that's going to be cracking through soon, like outside of Dilley and Lankinen and Tompkins. So, and then the other thing I want to go back to, Shepard, as you mentioned, Carolina as a trade destination. One of the other teams I've had my eye on a little bit in a trade situation. Now, there might take some cap flexibility here to make this work. Maybe the Hawks have to retain something or whatnot. The Edmonton Oilers do not have the best goaltending this season. Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith don't do much for you. I mean, maybe I the one scenario I was thinking of is the trade. You switch Leonard and Mike Smith. Mike Smith comes to Chicago and is Corey Crawford's backup. And Leonard goes and becomes the number one in Edmonton. Mike Smith's expiring contract to $1 million. And then you pull away from Edmonton one of their young D prospects that they've drafted the last few years, either Evan Bouchard or Philip Broberg, I think is first name.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. So that was just one random, as I was looking around for potential trade destinations, that was one team that popped on my radar, that a team with that's in the playoff chase with goaltending that's not great and heads defensive prospects or players that might be either at or near the NHL level, with each of those guys were top 10 picks. So there's one thing I'll just throw out into the wind, and I have no idea where that would go. Like Brandon said, he's been wrong several times. I will also almost guaranteed be wrong about this trade. But if it happens in a month, I will play this on loop for the next podcast. It'll just be 45 minutes of that whole thing I just said. That'll be an entire podcast, if I'm right.
Carolina and Edmonton would also need to – like, both teams would need some finagling because they have less than $3.5 million.
Yeah, that's where the salary cap wiggling and all that. Like, and that's what makes a lot of this so difficult. As I was going at the cap-friendly page, you look at the salary cap situations for teams in the NHL – there are very few teams with much wiggle room. I mean, you have to get down, go about halfway down the list before you get into a team with $3 million in cap space. So there's not I was reading Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts today, and there did not seem like a lot of optimism about it being a lively trade market this year at the deadline. Now, that they also said that happens every year, and then every year they end up being wrong, but he said they're getting that feeling once again that there's just not a lot of things that teams are going to do this year.
And to go back to that point Brandon made, that it takes a goalie getting used to a system. A guy on what, his fourth team, probably is used to getting used to a system pretty fast.
Problem solved. There you go. Shepherd Price solving everyone's problems. So the other big picture thing, I think we've exhausted the goalie topic enough for now. The other big picture item that I wanted to dive into a little bit tonight is on the blue line, because at Fords, the Blackhawks Fords, they seem pretty much set. I mean, they've got some expiring contracts to deal with, Kubalik and Strome. You know, well, I assume that we're going to want to keep both those guys around. There's not a ton of prospects in that area or anyone that's going to – I don't think there's really anybody left that's going to jump into the top six. Kirby Dach's already in Chicago. Maybe Evan Barrett, if he keeps popping off at Penn State, makes his way to the NHL level and sneaks into the top six, or maybe in the third line somewhere. But there's not a lot of prospects at the Blackhawks four position where there's a lot of intrigue. The blue line, though, totally different story. I mean, Adam Boqvist is here. Nicholas Bonin is in the AHL, and every time Brandon Kane talks about him, it sounds like good things are happening for him down in Rockford. And then Ian Mitchell's tearing things up in Denver, I think still tearing things up. Every time I read about him, it was good. And so there's a lot and a lot of interesting players on the blue line for the Blackhawks. And this is where I'm very intrigued with them, because – so I just named those prospects. Adam Boqvist already there and has a roster spot. Ian Mitchell and Bowden could very much be in contention for one next summer when training camp comes out. And then if you look at the Blackhawks' salary cap situation – Duncan Keith is under contract for next season. So are Ali Mata, Connor Murphy, Dennis Gilbert, Adam Boqvist, Slater Cuckoo is a restricted free agent, Eric Gustafson's unrestricted. And then you also have Calvin DeHaan and Brent Seabrook returning from season-ending surgeries. That's a lot of players for six spots. So, Shepherd Price, we'll come back to you with this. Do you have any idea? Oh, I know one guy you're saying is going to go, but who's going to be around when this team gets to – I mean, even as soon as next season, out of all those guys we mentioned, like, who's going to stay, who's going to go?
It really depends on how Brent Seabrook's surgeries go, because if he's if he he's having three surgeries. He's had three surgeries. I believe he's either had or is having still three surgeries in the last month. That's not great.
Not great.
Both hips and a shoulder. It's kind of concerning. Those could be career ending, depending on how they go. And he wouldn't have to go the Hosa route. He could be either in the replacing Pat Foley in the booth or coaching or doing something within the organization in a millisecond if he wanted to. Or he could just be back on the ice playing not as well as he has in the past, but somewhat well. I don't think he got – either way, I don't think he gets bought out. The buyout –
yeah,
the buyout calculator on Cap Friendly, it does not make sense to buy out Brent Seabrook. The sort of relief you get is inconsistent, and then you have that buyout would last 8 years. Yeah. That is not a great deal for the Blackhawks. The two buyout actual people who would make sense are Olli Maatta and Duncan Keith. The last one is probably a very unpopular opinion, but his buyout makes a lot more sense for the Blackhawks than Seabrook's does. It was only 6 years, three of which are below $1 million, and the cap relief is consistent. They don't really have to like plan like, oh, we get $1 million here and then 800,000 here, then $3 million here. They get $1 million, $1 million. And Duncan Keith, if you look at his numbers this season, has not been playing up to expectations. I don't even – he shouldn't be playing with Adam Boqvist. Adam Boqvist needs an actual safety blanket like Connor Murphy. I don't think Duncan Keith fits on his team, in all honesty, if they're going to try and contend for another cup.
You mentioned that earlier, and I hadn't even thought about it. Like I could see a blue line. Like if Mitchell and Bowden and Boqvist all materialize into what you hope they are, and Connor Murphy stays good, DeHaan comes back and he's healthy, and maybe Maatta and Cuckoo are okay, you could see where Duncan Keith's services are no longer needed. I think you would have to be damn sure that all those players are going to pan out before you even think about buying out Duncan Keith, because I know you said the numbers aren't great, but I think the numbers are still good enough to where he probably needs to be around. I think that's like a way down like item number 20, where if 1 through 19 work out well, then you can explore that route. That it's going to take me a lot to get to that point. But the guy you did mention, and I thought you would start with, was Erik Gustafsson.
Oh, yes. They send him away immediately as soon as possible.
There we go. There we go. There it is.
Give Connor Murphy an actual pairing, an actual partner, somebody he can play with, and I think you'd watch a guy who should be a number one defenseman on this team become a number one defenseman on this team.
There you go. All right. Thank you. Well, like, one of the thoughts I had was at the deadline, again, another trade you could make is if Adam Boqvist pans out in the way he should, he becomes a better version of Erik Gustafsson, so Erik Gustafsson becomes redundant. You don't need him on the team anymore. In an ideal trade scenario, you trade away Erik Gustafsson and get another more defensively oriented defenseman on the blue line to help out, which is with the depth and more defensive roles that allows – it takes some of the defensive burden away from Duncan Keith and away from Adam Boqvist and guys that can help with other areas of the game where they're better at. So, but again, I think everybody at the deadline is going to be wanting a more reliable top four defenseman. The Blackhawks are going to want them, so are 15 other NHL teams that are in the playoff chase. If you got a team with a struggling power play, yep, and there's a 60-point defenseman from last season available at the deadline, that's another guy in Erik Gustafsson who could fetch a pretty decent haul at the trade deadline if he continues to play decent hockey. He's been much better of late. The whole team's been better of late. But if he keeps trending up with an expiring contract, that's going to be a really, really interesting bargaining piece for Stan Bowman to use at the deadline if they decide to do that. Brandon Kane, what about you? I know you've got more eyes on some of the prospects. So do you have any kind of feel or idea about where this team will be going in direction on the blue line in terms of who will be here and who won't be in the next year or two?
Well, last year they made a mistake not trading Gustafson. That's pretty clear now.
Yeah, with the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah, and the reason I think they didn't do that is because Boqvist wasn't really hitting his stride in London during February, and he like really took off at the end of the season and then into the playoffs. So if he had that stretch kind of extended during that time, then they would have been like, oh yeah, like he's ready to go. And they would have shipped off Gustafson.
Right.
The problem with the thought of Murphy-Boqvist pairing is that puts Murphy on his offside, and he definitely looks more comfortable being on the right than he does the left. Okay. So,
right, but you couldn't try Boqvist on his offside?
I mean, you could. That's just a 19-year-old kid who's still learning the defensive side of the game. So why throw another challenge at him?
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
That's just the argument against that. I'm not saying it's like a total wrong idea, but that's probably their thinking of it. So, like, I think what they want is to have Boateng and Boqvist be together, because Boateng is more reliable defensively, but you still have two offensive playmakers together instead of a more defensive-oriented one and then an offensive guy. So I think Mitchell can play both sides, so that kind of benefits them, and so can Cuckoo if they decide to keep him.
Yeah, and I feel like Slater Cuckoo won't cost a lot of money. Like, I forget what his cap hit this year is, not much at all, and I can't imagine
he'd 925.
I can't imagine he'd – you could probably get him back for $1.5 million per, and if he and Mata continue playing well on that third D pairing, you know, that's a solid bargain deal, because Mata's at $4 million, so maybe a little higher than you want, but, I mean, the nice thing is you're going to have – Boqvist on an entry-level deal, Ian Mitchell on an entry-level deal, and maybe even Bowden on an entry-level deal. Although that is – you're putting a lot of onus on some young defensemen to develop quickly, and I think that's the one thing that concerns me about the way the Blackhawks are heading.
So I think the other thing you have to think about with the defensemen is the upcoming expansion draft and who they can expose and who will be, like, automatically protected. And that's all those young guys. And then Mata's one that would probably be exposed. So that opens up a spot right away.
Right.
And you're also thinking, like, you know, all these guys are going to pan out and no one's going to be traded away in a package deal. So, like, is it 2 years ago already where we were trying to figure out, like, where Hinostroza would be in the lineup and then he gets sent off in the post?
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That was like the 19th different guy that we thought was going to be a permanent fixture in the lineup and then got traded away. Nick Schmaltz, I think, was the biggest one for me. I thought Schmaltz was going to be the guy, one of the guys, like the new piece of the core, what I think Dylan Strome is becoming quickly, and then he was gone.
I mean, that's what he's going to be in Arizona. So
yeah, well, yeah, he's been everything I've seen.
Him and Barrett Hayden, that's their 1-2.
Yeah, a very interesting trade where both sides seem to benefit greatly from it. Like, Strome's playing well in Chicago and Schmaltz is doing well in Arizona. Like, there doesn't have to be a winner and a loser in a trade. Both teams can benefit. And I think that was one pretty good example of it.
Yep.
And so, well, we've been talking about all these defensemen, and one of the other interesting things in that situation is that if the Hawks decide to add some pieces – maybe even at this trade deadline, I'm not sure, you know, I don't know if the Hawks are going to go all in because, I mean, you can't always rule out, like, Leonard and Crawford just going off for a month and maybe the Hawks make a deep playoff run. I would be very surprised if that would happen because it I don't think the 8 seed making a deep playoff run happens as much as people think it would, but they certainly have the goaltending talent to do it. So I don't see – but – the whole reason I'm saying this is that if the Hawks do have defensive pieces to use, if they decide to make a trade this season. And you put Seabrook on the LTIR, and that does free up a fair amount of salary cap space for them this year. And, I mean, I don't know. Which, like, you can trade. Maybe Dennis Gilbert gets traded. Maybe Gustafson gets traded. Maybe they decide that either Bowden or Mitchell is not going to be part of the future, and they trade one of those guys away to get a piece that can help them right now. So that's another intriguing thing to watch in the upcoming deadline. And it sounded like one of you guys were about to say something. No? Me? No? Never mind. No. All right. I'll have to edit this part out then. But anyway, but it seems like they do have some pieces to use at the deadline if they want to go that route. And I just – I think the biggest thing is we're just going to have to see where they stand in 3 weeks, because if they're still very much in the playoff chase when we get to late February, like I feel like they're going to try and make some moves. I feel like they're going to try and buy some players. And Shepard had a piece today where he was talking about some people that the Blackhawks could pick up on the blue line to help out a little bit, to provide some more depth, because you can never have enough defensive depth. And Shepard, was there anybody else in that article that you – well, you can reference some of the guys in the article. Was there anyone else you were had an eye on that might be able to help this team out?
So I think there's four guys the Blackhawks should have an eye on. I'm going to go in order of the least heresy. Sammy Vatanen probably makes a ton of sense, although he's going to be on the more expensive end. There's going to be a good bit of race for him. Andy Green, also from the Devils, pretty solid, reliable veteran presence, good in the locker room. He's the captain.
Old as shit.
Andy Green. Brendan Dillon from the San Jose Sharks. It's fair to say they'll probably be sellers at this point. And then the ultimate heresy, Alec Martinez, the guy who beat the Blackhawks
in the
2014 Game 7 overtime, is likely going to be available. He's on an expiring deal. He's a pretty good defenseman. I would not mind seeing a Connor Murphy, Alec Martinez second pairing.
I don't – yeah, I wouldn't hate it as much because, I mean, like you said, I don't think
– Another righty.
Well, it's funny. Like, usually teams have a glutton of left-handed defensemen.
Right.
I don't – can Alec Martinez play on his offside? Maybe that'll help him. That's the one area of hockey that I'm still always, like, fishy about is understanding the left and right defenseman situation, that – You can't just have 19 defensemen. You have to understand which side they're going to play on, because that was what makes a good pairing. That's why Keith and Seabrook were so good forever, because Keith's a lefty and Seabrook's a righty. But
Dave, can you even tell your left from your right? Because I really can't sometimes.
You just got to do the LJ thing.
Yeah,
I'm like Brandon. I can tell my left from my right. Like I will appreciate some self-deprecating moments, but I'm not going to go that far.
Whatever.
Yeah, sorry. It's been late. It's been a long day. I don't know. I didn't get there yet. But
You got a leg up on Jim Boylan.
I have no basketball takes, I don't want to make any because never mind.
What is Chicago basketball? That's the Houston.
The sky. Rock.
It's still. Hey,
Gavin Williams.
Go get Della Don back and then come talk to me. But so anyway, with the Blackhawks, I'm just looking at the list of players on the team and in the system, and it just this is the one thing I keep coming back to, and it feels like every time I scroll down, I see another name on the list, like Lucas Carlson. I keep hearing and reading good things about him in Rockford. Maybe he makes a jump at some point. And the guy they got in the Brendan Perlini trade back in September or October, Alec Regulov, who's playing with the London Knights right now, has a pretty good I've heard a lot of good things about him. And they had a second-round pick in this year's draft in Vlasic, who could eventually be a guy in 2 or 3 years. So they have an excessive amount of defensemen, players, and prospects in the pipeline, and there's only 6 spots at the NHL level. And some of those guys, I feel like they're going to start going, and I feel like this trade deadline might be it.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
This season was always going to be interesting because it felt like kind of a crossroads to where if the Blackhawks didn't win, they were going to get dangerously close to blowing up everything. Fire the GM, fire the coach, trade everybody. They've won. They've saved face a little bit. They're back in the playoff chase. I think they've, at least for the time being, kind of pushed back the window. They've cracked open that window that was rapidly slamming shut in all their faces. And again, I go back to what we were discussing at the top that as long as Patrick Kane is playing at the level he is, I think the Hawks still have some sort of chance. But before we wrap this whole thing up, I want to go back to what Shepard said at the top about Jeremy Colleton, because like the issues with the system and all that. And I see your point and I can't refute it. Do you think there's the Hawks with the way things are in Brandon, if you want to chime in, either one of you guys can answer this, but is there enough time in whatever time they have left to potentially get this four Stanley Cup, where if they decided to make a coaching move, do you think there's enough time to get another guy in here that can put everything together and win the cup? Like, will they give up on Colleton in time, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
If it's the right coach, yes.
Okay. Another solid answer. So I appreciate, Shepard. I appreciate the fact that you are nothing if not consistently confident in your answers, which – I am usually not, so that's credit to you. Brandon, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that team down south won, so, like, really anything in the world can happen.
Right, yeah. Still don't understand. Still can't believe that happened.
Yeah, and I think that if they were to bring in another coach, it would be a recycled head coach.
Oh, absolutely.
That yeah. would be their mantra.
Like, again – making the cross sports comparison that we'd love to do on this podcast, it feels like Jeremy Colleton was kind of like the Mark Trestman move that the Bears made. I'm not saying it's going to end like Trestman did, that, you know, that's a whole other aside, but it was going kind of outside of the box with a hire and getting someone new and different. And as soon as the Trestman era failed miserably in Chicago, they went and got John Fox, who was an established NFL head coach. And I feel like the same thing will happen with the Blackhawks, where if Colleton ends up losing his job, it's going to be Gerard Gallant or Peter DeBoer after he gets fired in Vegas, or I don't – insert former NHL head coach here. And I'm saying all these other names when we all know the answer is Mark Crawford, who's going to be the next Blackhawks head coach.
He will be the next Blackhawks interim head coach. We'll see if he's the head coach.
I would
love either head coach from the start of this season of the Vegas Golden Knights organization.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean,
there's a guy in the minors in Chicago who, again,
we know you like Rocky Thompson.
We know my take on Rocky Thompson.
I know you're a huge Rocky Thompson guy. I get it. I can't say I identify with it, but it's like it reminds me of from The Waterboy. Every time Dan Fouts would say, last game of the year, Brent can't hold it back, anything back now. We know. But I would put heavy sums of money on the Blackhawks' next head coach being Mark Crawford, no matter what. I feel like that's going to be the move no matter what they do. So I'm out of questions to ask you two for this podcast. So I will ask you for any other final thoughts about charting a course to the Blackhawks' fourth Stanley Cup that we hope to God happens in the next 2 or 3 years.
I like Mark Crawford as an assistant. I don't mind. I don't think he'd be a bad interim head coach. I don't think you should make him the head coach right now. And for the love of God, please don't hire Mike Babcock.
I feel like Mike Babcock may not get another head coaching job in the NHL. After the way all that stuff
– Here's the thing, though, is that after all the other allegations that followed him, what he did doesn't seem that bad anymore.
That's true. But I should take back what I said. It's the NHL. Someone's going to give him a job. That's just the way the NHL works. They don't try anybody new almost ever. The Blackhawks were a surprising exception to that. But for the most part, I mean, even when the Blackhawks hired Joel Quenneville a decade ago, it absolutely worked out. Don't get me wrong, but Quenneville had coached for about 20 seasons before he came to Chicago. And he was two other divisional opponents even. So, Brandon Kane, I know you've been slightly quiet. So, what do you have any other final thoughts on whatever it is we were just talking about for the last 45 minutes?
So, if the Blackhawks don't do anything toward the trade deadline, do you think there's more pressure for the Blackhawks to fire Colleton if they don't make the playoffs? Like, if they just stand pat?
Yes.
Maybe, well, probably.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's going to be the to answer your question, I think there will definitely be more pressure on him to get this team to the playoffs. And I think I think Colleton's definitely, at a very minimum, he's extended his job through the rest of the season. And I'm still not ruling out the fact that he figures everything out and maybe he ends up being the guy that leads the Hawks to the Cup. He's still very young in his career, so it's hard to – I don't want to take a firm stance one way or the other with him just because he's probably still learning a lot of things on the fly. But I think he's at a minimum, he's saved his job through the rest of the season. But over the next 2 months, I could see a scenario where if the Blackhawks, fall apart catastrophically, he loses his job in April at the end of the regular season with the Blackhawks. Like, if they plummet down to, like, the lottery again, even if there's injuries involved, if they plummet that far down in the standings again, he's probably going to be out of a job. Especially
Black Monday.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe good things happen and he ends up taking them to the playoffs and they win a series or two. Who knows? It's going to be very interesting to watch. We hope you come back to this podcast as it's happening to chime in with our show. But thank you very much for listening to this episode. Feel free to visit secondcityhockey.com. We've got plenty of content coming out this week in the bye week. Can't wait to have a podcast next week where we're going to talk about actual Blackhawks hockey and things that are happening on the ice. We'll definitely have a show in the middle of next week coming up again, probably whatever day the Hawks don't have a game, but we'll deal with that next week. But stay tuned to secondcityhockey.com. Check us out on Twitter. I'm at _DaveMelton. Brandon Kane's at Brandon M. Kane. Shepherd Price doesn't have Twitter anymore, so never mind that idea. Or follow the main account at 2ND City Hockey. Rate, subscribe, follow us on iTunes, say nice things about us, leave us 5 stars. All those really good things. Please do all of those things for us. We'd much appreciate it. And we will talk to you next week, and go Hawks.